Warning. ProTri News is a podcast with different opinions, knowledge and possibly fake news about triathlon racing. This is not for the faint of heart. If you get offended by what is said, please stop listening and go listen to some uplifting meditation music or just go work out and try again. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and some stories may be dramatized for comedic effect. Enjoy.
I don't know how much we could probably speak about that right now, but maybe at a later date.
We're just going straight into it. I love it. Well, because Kyle's not here, the whole show's gone to shambles. We haven't done a proper intro. We're just going to roll with that without our boy Kyle. He needs a bit of a break. He's got a lot of stress going on at work. But we realized we had to bring you a show as soon as possible because PTO Singapore was lit. I sort of said to the boys up front, I've been quite critical of the PTO and I wanted a chance to really say what a really bloody good job that was. Do we agree?
Fully. It was a reminder to me that you're better a no-show than a no-go. And I think what I mean by that is Miami should not have been the first race. Singapore was what we needed. It had the crowds. It had the broadcast. It had the field. And I think it was a really great race. The only thing, you know, that was brutal for us US viewers was that it was on in the middle of the night. But luckily you can get the entire race on YouTube. So that's how I watched it. I just threw it on the next morning and watched it. And I'm ready to get into it. But I think overall this is what we wanted to see. We were really excited. The visuals, the branding, everything was really great.
Yeah, and before we sort of get into the results and how the race itself panned out, I'll emphasize that the crowds looked brilliant. As soon as you pan away and you look at the city, it looks amazing. Well, you could see where the course was running. The actual content films, as in of the athletes, was really good. Even the swim coverage was better than normal. The hats were obvious, yeah.
The other thing that I thought too was even the roads that they were going down in Singapore, they had like the beautiful flowers on the side. Like that was just the city that brought that, right? But visually, it was just so spectacular. And, you know, they got really lucky with the thunderstorms both days. But, you know, that was how I envisioned the series should look.
Yeah, and I thought they were really good at, as the thunderstorm was coming in, they were very transparent about, you know, this race could be cancelled. Talbot, I don't know if you'll agree, I thought that was the best commentating we've had on an event as well. As in, they were self-criticizing, they were publicizing, they were interesting.
And just straight real feedback. Pat hit it on the head, though. I hate to be really critical or punch down. Well, I guess I actually love to punch down on things, but Miami should not have happened. Not as the first
race.
I don't even know. I don't think it should happen. I don't think it's a race venue for the PTO.
It's just a reminder that what we're looking for here is quality over quantity. And I think I don't think that we're going to say anything that the PTO hasn't discussed internally, but it's understanding and going, okay, we are going to bring premium, high-quality events. And I thought that's what happened in Singapore. I felt that in Singapore and just from watching.
And it's also very rare, I'll say, our opinion's actually valid. But we've been more critical of the PTO than maybe any show out there. We haven't bought into it. We don't have any financial investment in it. And yeah, I've got nothing bad to say about this race. I thought it was excellent. I thought the broadcast was much better. Yeah, they had a bit of timing split issue with the men's race, but as soon as the live tracker was back working, you have that on your phone, you watch the TV, there were enough spots and updating. Like, I thought it was brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, and it does give you a little bit of having the races be split, where again, in Miami, they were back-to-back, so it just really crushes the broadcast and the production team to do really a full day, where if you get that day break, you can get a reset and you can talk to your team and say, hey, look, we could just make these quick little edits here, how we're filming the race, how we're going to produce the race. This is what I'm planning for the race tomorrow. And then you have just that more polished look and feel and broadcast the next day. And so I think, the racing was great and there was a lot of action. I left Singapore being very excited for San Francisco.
100%. And I wasn't that optimistic about the series after Miami. And it's changed my mind completely. And what I also found, and Kat said to me as we were watching it, was I'm actually invested in this. They keep saying you've got to have a season-long narrative. I thought, that is not, I don't know, I don't really understand what they're talking about. I started doing maths on points after just race two. And it matters. And now I'm like, well, does Youri Cullen just get a contract now? Like, all these sort of things, like this dynamic of, like, I am invested in the season again because of Singapore. So, yeah.
I really felt the season-long narrative, and that kept coming up. And especially after, you know, kind of a juxtaposition with Oceanside, where it's the first race. There's also some nuance to, there's an Ironman coming up. So it's like somebody like Lionel Sanders could win St. George and be way ahead in the points, and then somebody could just eclipse them, you know, or sorry, the weekend before is Ironman Texas, right? So you can do one race. And so it's a little discombobulated that way. But I privately between, you know, our group chat and then just with Talbot and Kyle separately, we're talking about who's had just, you know, so on the women's side and on the men's side, some top 10 performances that have now put them into top five in the overall, you know, and I think that we're already talking about the points. We're talking about the season long narrative. We're talking about the four athletes that haven't shown up to the first two races so far that have to now show up to the last six. Yeah. And it is giving us something to talk about. And so I think we're going to dive into this, but you're going to see the athletes that didn't perform the way they wanted to in Miami and Singapore cumulatively. They're scratching their heads going, I think I didn't have San Francisco on the board. Now I'm going to put San Francisco in because I got to get some points before the back half of the year. Yeah. So I think now all of a sudden you're going to see a very competitive start list in San Francisco because the clock's ticking and time's run out on a few people and they've got to show up and they've got to be ready.
Right before we move on to the races, another thing that, just like what you said on the season-long narrative, the content side of the entire thing as well is starting to become real. Like you see Rudy Von Berg, you see Leon Chevalier, they're just sitting in the chairs at the finish line, and they're like, what is going on? You see Ben Canute, who this is very unlike Ben Canute. I mean, Ben Canute has to be go home scratching his head as well, saying like, what the hell is going on? And it brings a more season long narrative. And also too, what's going on at the hotels and stuff. In our little text chain, you hear more and more drama happening at the hotel. And I hope that they can really attempt to capture the content side of that and show on more of like a content perspective. Like these athletes, they're going to be with each other, I mean, 6 to 7 times throughout the year, all at the same hotel and all that. Usually, you see, actually not usually, you never see Daniela versus Lucy outside of an Ironman World Championship. They're not together. And so the fact that we're seeing this week in and week out is just awesome. And it's awesome for the sport.
Yeah, I have two predictions there. One, I'm predicting at some point this year, a fight between two athletes in the hotel.
I would agree. I've already heard some pretty juicy stuff of athletes.
And the second one there is another pro for Singapore, which I'm sort of biased towards. And again, it was a negative Miami. Apparently, there was a really good after party in Singapore. And there was nothing in Miami. There was nowhere to go. But apparently, the after party in Singapore, I think the split days and not finishing really late made for a good after party, which athletes love. So why not? Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And what's going to happen with the points now where you have some athletes that dropped scores that have nothing that are going to start to potentially panic about getting entry into the series for the following year? When does that start to really become a reality where they go, okay, well, now I'm 4 in and I've got nothing to show for it? Will we see a late season pivot where they go, okay, I might exit from the series to just try and like, they might say like, look, I can't make money in this series. Like I'm really kind of like a little bit underwater here. What does that look like if they're trying to exit, assess, or reemerge, but it could almost just be like that. That's a problem I see in a couple months, but obviously you've got some athletes that have two races now with nothing to show for it.
Oh yeah. I mean, look, Kat's on 0 points for the year so far as an example. And there are lots of others. There are some, I guess you can put Kat in that boat, and there are some which also have focuses on the Ironman races. And there are two platinum tier races, Ironman are doing the 70.3 Worlds, Ironman Worlds. So they're good opportunities. But of course, you've got to get your shit together and actually enter. You've got to qualify for those. You've got to plan those into your season. And you've still got to do really well at those. The fallback ones, of course, are then the gold tier races, the Ironman series races. Now, it's definitely easier to go and score points there, but the strength of field score is much worse. I mean, Ashley scored 100 points. Now, if you're worried about getting into the series, you're not trying to beat Ashley in your points. But you need to go and win a couple of Ironman series races for you to think about featuring in those top 15 points, I would say. And yeah, I don't know, people might try that.
Here's a perfect point to what Mark's saying for, and I know we always hit on this every week, but there is a chance that you can still get good points to get onto the series for next year. So here's a perfect example. Kyle Smith scores 89.8 points, fifth place. And Oceanside was not an easy race by any means. I mean, it was a stacked field, and Lionel comes away with 89 points. So Lionel's result point wise got him fifth place performance. So it's not like that you can't get into the series with the Ironman races. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I've really looked at the women's and the men's side after two races so far. And there's two people that really stand out to me. One, it's Haley Chura on 100%. The women's side. And yes. then on the men's side, it's Aaron Royal. And you look at both of them, just have two top tens. But now Aaron's ranked fourth overall in the men's series. And remember, Aaron was the last male to get into the series, right? He had a roll down spot, and he barely snuck into this thing. But now he's punching in and really solidifying a space in the ranking. Same thing with Haley Chura. And you've got just two solid top 10 performances. And it's like, if you can just keep chipping away and you don't have to go for these hero results, or if you're having a bad day and these people like the DNFs are like a chosen DNF is really going to bite you in the butt later, you know?
Yeah. I wanted to shout out Haley Chura. She's a fellow podcaster. Essentially, she's over on Feisty all the time. She's turned up to the two, and these are the two soft women's races, you would have to say, because a lot of the women are coming to do the last six. They're going to have to now. But, I mean, who had Haley Chura inside the top 10 comfortably in both the first two races? That's going to see her. You know, she only needs one more score before the grand final now that's reasonable. She's going to finish way higher up thanks to these first two results than other people thought she would. Maybe Haley knew she was going really well. But Haley's out there beating Ellie Salthouse at the weekend. You know, Haley's out there rolling Imogen Simmons. I know she had a bad race. Like, yeah, fair. And I'm with you, Pat. Like, banking these early scores, as we said a few times, is going to really help some people.
No, and you just, now all of a sudden, she's got two early ones in the bank. The next one in San Francisco is essentially a home race, easy travel again. So she can be like, look, I just got to put together one more. And then you can stay home, train your butt off, and then you just do one or two in the late season. And then you're good and you're set for the series.
And I've just realized what we're doing. We're talking about someone that finished eighth. There isn't another race that does that because there isn't this narrative, right? And the narrative makes us look down and see these battles further down the field, which again, I didn't believe would be interesting. I was wrong. I do find it interesting. Should we talk about the race? Talbot, are you going to?
Yeah, totally. So the women's race, fantastic race. There's tons of platforms, and I missed on both races due to time zone. I woke up at about 5 a.m., skimmed the beginning of the swim, kind of just flicked through the swim and got onto the bike and stuff. Basically, Lucy Charles Barclay and Lucy Buckingham come out with, and then they just start to ride away. It looks like Lucy, reading her posts and stuff, that she's definitely not in form. She, late to the running game, late December, started running again for the first time with a calf tear from Ironman World Championships in Kona. So she knew she needed to get away on the bike, and gosh, she is getting quick. So it will be interesting to see. Very smart on Lucy, though, to go ahead and bag some early points. Chatting with Reese, he believes that these points will be crucial towards the back half of the year.
Definitely agree. Yeah, 2 second places straight off when you're not and you're not at your fittest. And we don't doubt her when she says that either. That's not someone saying, oh, I'm not at my best, when they actually are. That's pretty apparent for Lucy. I thought as well, you touched the name there. What a race from Lucy Buckingham. She often tails away so much worse than that. And actually, she put together a really good run in the heat. She pulled some legs. There was a moment on the bike where she cramped up, stopped pedaling, got dropped a bit by Lucy Charles. But she picked the right time to stretch out as she came over the top of the bridge. And she got ahead in the game. And I'm really happy for Lucy Buckingham. I know she'll walk away with that result over the moon. I loved Bucko, her boyfriend, his take on the commentary. He was super candid. He was like, if she can hang on and run to a top 10 here, like, we'll be super happy. Like, I'm worried she's riding too hard, but she didn't. The other surprise result was, I thought, Els Visser. I did not have Els Visser coming third, running her way into third, having ridden really well. I think maybe the third fastest bike split. Third fastest bike split. She rode 3 minutes into Ashley Gentle on the bike. Don't think anyone saw that coming. Her training camp out in China with her coach Brett is obviously paid off, and she's showing some really good form there. So the actual results end up being Ashley Gentle, Lucy Charles Barkley, Els Visser, Amelia Watkinson, another great result, fourth place. These surprise names. I think the temperature really shook some people.
Yep.
Interesting watching the female race unfold. You had Chelsea Sodaro pull out of the race. You know, I don't know what's going on with her training. It looks like she had a very good first half of the year, and I don't want to knock her down. But the only thing that I just scratch my head on is I see a Chelsea, if she just hung on, she could have ran herself in nearly the top five. And
yeah,
I was very bummed to see her pull out.
That was one of those points of the commentary which was bold from Jan. And it was interesting. It's like real sport. Triathlon's never had real sport commentating.
Can we run that audio?
We'll try and get Carl to cut that audio in. But if you can't, have a look on your left, and a few other people have posted it. He basically said, you know, she shouldn't just be riding straight home to the hotel. She needs to. He didn't say she shouldn't drop out. He did say later you should do your best to finish, but he didn't at that time say you shouldn't drop out. What he was saying was you shouldn't just finish and run straight to the hotel. You need to go back to transition, pick up your stuff, close out the event, you know, and deal with it, and then walk away. And his reason for that was basically you need to face those demons to process them. That was his take. And what I love is it's actual commentating. You know, if you watch soccer, they slate people. They're like, that was poor defending. Same with NFL, same with basketball, whatever. We've just had hype people doing commentating on triathlon up until now. And it's actually nice to hear critical analysis of what's going on. So yeah, Chelsea Sodaro, bad day. I did notice that was her fourth different bike or bike position in four races this year. So something's not settled there. She's making a lot of changes on that front. So we'll see how that pans out for her.
And I'm not being critical on Chelsea. We both just said, I believe if Chelsea would have hung on, the run in the females field is, with this race in particular being such a hot race, if you just stay in it, you can motor your way through. And I believe Chelsea was one of those athletes. Another athlete, unfortunately, we heard that she was a bit ill going into the race, India Lee. I would have loved to seen her on fine form here. I think she could have bagged some incredible points, maybe got into the top three.
Yeah, the way she came off, she started to die, it looked like, towards the end of the bike. And I think she'd had like fever-like symptoms. And if you've got anything left controlling your body temperature, you're just done for. You know, it's going to exacerbate whatever happens to you so much worse. Probably correct to pull the pin if you know you've got a residual illness. I mean, imagine flaring that up, going down with heat on top of a bit of a virus. You'd be in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I'll just talk about just touch on my anecdotal experience with like fever compared to whether you're have some sort of other sickness. Is the fever really, it takes your body 10 to 14 days to re-regulate after a fever. So for any, whether you're age group athlete or development athlete, if it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and your fever is really over 101 Fahrenheit, plan on not coming back from that over the weekend. it's going to take a whole nother cycle. So I think I've had to experience that the hard way, and it's just the fevers really dysregulate your body's ability. And then you go and chuck in where they were racing. I mean, you're just going to overcook. So that's been my experience on that. It's really tough to make those decisions at the time.
And speaking on India Lee, I'll tell you where she really, really went wrong in her entire lead up and all that. When she got sick, her biggest problem is she didn't call TeleRx. And that's what I want to talk to you about, our sponsor of the show, TeleRx. If you're feeling sick, you need a prescription, you're not feeling too good. If India would have just rang up TeleRx, talked to the online doc, got a prescription, she could have won the race if she would have had TeleRx on her side. So we do have a promo discount code on there. Pat, what is our discount code?
All caps PTN for 20% off.
Let's say you head over to Singapore, you get a massive ear infection, everything else taken along, ring up TeleRx. I don't know if they sell
it. You've got to bring it with you. You got to order it. So in the case of if you're going to San Francisco, they ship to California. It's super easy there.
So there you go, TeleRx. Rest of the women's race, phenomenal day. Lucy plugged away. I thought 6 minutes was enough.
Oh, me too, mate. But I will say none of them ran fast. I don't know. The course wasn't particularly fast, but a 109 for Ashley Gentle is sedentary for her in basic conditions, which shows just how hard it was. The second best run of the day was actually only 3 minutes slower than Ashley. I thought it would be more, but that was Amelia Watkinson with a 112. Great run for her. After that, Ashley was 7 minutes faster than the third place female. You know, she ran over 7 minutes into Lucy Charles, which, and Lucy looked good. She was running. She didn't completely cave in or anything. I think it was just a battle. Ashley, can she be beaten at this distance, Talbot?
I think time will tell. I want to see Lucy around Las Vegas. Lucy's going to show up to race in London. She will thrive. I don't like to compare because there's no comparison on Alistair Brownlee, the pressure going into the London Games. But it will be, Lucy has an insane following. It will be so exciting to watch that race. Let's see Lucy plug away. And other than Lucy, Ann Hug. Where's Ann Hug? She has to race the rest of the series. Is she injured? We haven't heard from her. I think that those are her biggest threats right now.
I have a slight inside line on Ann Haugen that I had her tri-suit in Miami, and her sponsors asked for her tri-suit back off me because they needed to get it to her. So I only say that because I'd love to see Ann Haug back. We know she had a slight sickness, relatively serious, we think. So I really hope that's a good indicator that she's going to come back. Anne's not the youngest of athletes in the field. This might be her last year on the PTO. You don't know how long she'll go for, but it would be great to see Anne Howe go out with one big win. And Taylor Knibb is the other one. If Taylor Knibb can swim with Lucy Charles, she can ride better than they did there. You know, she's not losing time to Ashley Gentle initially. Like Ashley started to claw back at the start, that gap could be even bigger. And you give on a non-crazy heat day, you give 6.5 minutes to a Taylor Knibb on form, you're not catching her. So I do think she can be beaten, but at the moment, that was a magnificent performance from... Also, brilliant in T1. She got out the swim, she hit T1 really hard, and she got clear on the bike. So she didn't have to then play games with the others for a long, long time until they finally caught her. She could just do her thing.
So, sorry, I have a question about the course. So I saw on the broadcast, I was particularly watching really well on the women's race, but going over those bridges, I thought this course was flat. A lot of them were in their little chain ring and easiest gear.
It topped out at 18% on one of those bridges. So most people stripped off the one by. I know Sam Laidley went out with a 58 one by, and he had to borrow a 58 two by. He had a small inside training ring, I think, and he borrowed one. I think Mikanute had one, fellow Canyon athlete, and they chucked that on so he could go back to a two by setup because that bridge was just too much of a grind otherwise. Yeah.
Yeah, I could tell. Yeah. So, it looked like a really hard course.
Again, great. That's what the courses need. It makes it interesting.
and beautiful course. Before we move on to the men's, last other thing just to add on to that, I'm excited to see starting in Las Vegas post-Olympics, you're going to start getting the wild cards of like someone like Julia Duran and these ITUs. There's a Norwegian athlete as well. And they will bring that fast swim, high bike power. I mean, I know that it's the thing about it is it's shorter than the 70.3. We saw Yelagin struggle in Oceanside, but this is shorter than a 70.3, and they can usually hang on that run. So,
not to mention contracted athletes Taylor Spivey and Flora Duffy, who both will swim at the front and both can ride really well. So it makes it interesting. Ashley, though, when that swim group gets a little bit bigger, if it splits a bit, Ashley would like to find herself with Taylor Spivey, for instance, like if it doesn't stretch too much. But if that gap goes, that could be a real powerful group off the front.
Let's dive into the men. Fantastic racing. My biggest takeaway right now, and I hate to punch him after such an amazing result, Sam Long. And the reason why I'm so mad at Sam is I believe Sam could have won this race if he would have not went to Oceanside. Thoughts?
100%.
His swim was awful. I mean, sorry, Sam. Like, that was such a big gap. If Oceanside, if we think it improved his swim by not going, I agree with you. I'm not sure it would have improved overall. Maybe he could have ridden a little bit faster. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. He's a minute 37 down on Yuri Kulin.
With a 30-second penalty.
Okay, so now he's down to a minute seven. So now, but what I'm saying in Oceanside is he swam as hard as he could. He biked the 90K, absolutely insane. And then, you know, he ran probably two-thirds of that hard. And then he got on a plane and did a 15-hour flight to Singapore. To think that your body is not stressed from that race and that travel, you're lying to yourself. And so I think while it's insanely consistent, that's what we would expect Sam to do 100 out of 100 days is to go second. We know he's capable of that. I just think that, you know, obviously he wanted to do the double. He succeeded at the double because he got them both done. But it came at a cost of not getting to win one of them.
Agree. Yeah, all right. You've convinced me. I agree. Yeah.
And to defend him a little bit, I don't think Sam in any way, shape, or form realized the Lionel Sanders that was going to show up to Oceanside. So probably in his head was like, easy W. I can get on the podium here and back some points. Which, think about how many key swimming days he missed. Yes, he did do a taper, but he did a taper in Oceanside. I think if he would have kept on that gas in the swim, you take claw back 30 seconds, almost a minute on the swim. Could be wrong, but...
Yeah, maybe. I wonder, did he need the qualification for 70.3 Worlds as well? Was that another reason he went to Oceanside?
Nope. No, because when Pucan, he got that in Pucan.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, all right, yeah, makes no sense. Fair enough. I grant you that. So Yuri Kulin won. Actually, people on this show called it, and Kyle's livid that he's, you know, he called it. And he's not here to celebrate it. But so, Kyle called Yuri Kulin for the win.
Kyle called it on the show. After Magnus Ditlev crashed and broke his wrist pre-riding in Singapore, I changed my pick to Yuri Kulin. And so I feel a little bit valid there. But Kyle made the big shot. He called it on the show and got it.
Yeah, I had him third as well on the show. Like, so I don't think any of us are that surprised. I think we're all surprised how he did it. He's gone from being an average rider that has played with the rules a bit to get to the run to being able to ride a minute off the front from the likes of Kyle Smith, Mika Noot, Alistair Brownlee, etc. He only rode 4 seconds slower than Sam Long over the course. Again, shout out to the PTO. I don't think the lead moto gave him much because it often filmed off to the side. And they did what cycling does, where they filmed him off the front as he was braking. But then they dropped that bike back to the front of the chase pack. And they also got, you know, a bit of a pull from it as well. So I don't even think you can attribute it to that. And then we know he runs really well. He died a bit in the back half of the run, but you would expect in that heat. I know he collapsed across the line and was taken to hospital.
There's a clip that's gone viral of Yuri. Can I just talk about it for a second? Because I don't think it's not necessarily fair for Yuri. So there's a clip of Yuri failing to grab a bunch of water bottles. And I'm gonna position my camera so you can do this. When you're servicing a water bottle to a rider, you don't hold the water bottle like your hand is a table, because then the water bottle just knocks straight off because you're going presumably 20 plus miles an hour and person is moving zero. So that water bottle is just going to hit off every time. You instead need to position your hand at the top of the water bottle and move it slightly in the direction that the rider's heading to try and match or mirror the speed that the rider is going. So the person that's handing the bottle will stand in place, but just slightly move their arm to mimic and get closer to that 20 miles per hour. So just a little heads up for any future volunteers. You're not like a table. You're like a swing.
And I know it was course restricted, but again, the left-hand side aid stations obviously disadvantage 90% of people out there being right-handed. So you're trying to do it with your weak hand as well when it's hot and slippery. You know, you do need those aid stations on the right hand side, really, or at least both sides. But they said you weren't allowed to run with them. I think it's a bit of a health and safety thing.
No, you can't. You can't run with them. You've got to swing your hand like a pendulum.
Yeah,
when you're doing that feed. Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, that would be a small change for them. But yeah, Yuri had missed five in a row. Chelsea had the same. Quite a few. But his result was pretty like phenomenal to be able to ride off the front, like just so convincingly.
3 minutes. He biked 3 minutes slower than that front group last year at the European Open in Ibiza. Just to give everyone kind of
a much harder course, to be fair to him, you would have to say.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it's a huge result for his team as well. His coach, Kostel Paul Tvet, I believe is how you say his name. It's an interesting background. He's Ukrainian-born, Russian-speaking, did the bulk of his successful coaching career coaching the national Russian speed skating team, which is fairly incredible, to then transition to do triathlon and have such success.
When did he coach them?
He coached them from about 2011 up through Sochi. And obviously there was the Sochi scandal there. So the Russian skating team he was in charge of were actually banned from all competition by the IOC just through doping allegations, which is why he appealed that in 2018, but that was turned down. So I believe that's why he's moved to triathlon coaching. So, you know, it's a huge step for him into the successful triathlon coaching career role as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, another interesting thing about Yuri is, and I hope this doesn't affect the rest of his year because that was a phenomenal result by him. But going to the well when he had that big of a gap and having to leave to the hospital, I don't want to say he had a heat stroke. He hasn't really said what he had, but I hope that it does not affect. We've seen this time and time again with athletes, the likes of Tommy Zafiris to Johnny Brownlee to Emma Pallant Brown. I hope that this does not damage Yuri in some type of way, as he is, first off, the leader of the series. He's a wild card and could win the series. I hope this doesn't impact the rest of his season.
No, and I hope that also you do get a bit of a recovery bonus by getting an IV banged in early and get some fluids back on board as directly as possible. So hopefully that compensates that. While we're on Yuri, I will say, if you didn't see our post, when I said that someone on Jack Kelly's show had slammed Javier Gomez for getting a slot in the series, I said it was Yuri Killen. I just got the name confused. It was a different person on that show. So sorry, Yuri, if anyone didn't see our clarification, don't think that Yuri badmouthed Gomez. He absolutely didn't. And he did come here and win really convincingly. Sam Long was second, as we talked about. Peter Heemrijk, good to see him back. He came second here last year, third at this race.
DNF'd in Miami.
DNF'd in Miami. And then third at this race. He's just a very solid athlete. He swims well, makes that front group, rides in it, and he's a good runner. He battled it a lot with Mika Noot, who kind of tailed off towards the end. But yeah,
I've got the results up here. Just a few other notable mentions. David McNamee, again, he DNF'd in Miami. He came fourth in Singapore, so he really helped himself out here. And then I'm looking at a guy like Kyle Smith, who got a wild card, fifth place, fantastic. Josh Amberger, 10th place, got a late entry week of. That's great. The one that I'm scratching my head about is someone
Jason
that
West.
I picked to win the series.
Right. And you, Jason West, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
What do we say we're on Team Jason for a second? I would have never in a million years said, okay, whatever he got, I don't remember his exact result in Miami, but it was certainly less than stellar. I thought he was going to win it or get second. I thought the same thing in Singapore, and he got 14th.
So interestingly, he had a much better race in some respects here because he hung on the bike, but that's where I actually think he went wrong. You know, they didn't get rid of him until 50K, 55K. Like, he was with that front group. You know, he was with Peter Heimerich. He was with Alistair. He was with Mika Nuke, Kyle Smith. And they eventually dropped him. Now, I wonder whether he just went a bit too deep there and essentially got too hot, as in spent too long at threshold, body cooked, and then he couldn't run because he had one of the slowest runs of the day, second slowest run of the day. He basically finished. You know, that's all he did. He ran 12 minutes slower than Ashley Gentle. No, not quite right. 10 minutes slower than Ashley, whatever. So I think he showed some promise in that his swim was really good. His bike was very good to a point, but then the course bit him in the ass.
Are athletes looking at Jason, Mark? Are they looking at Jason saying, we need to get rid of him, do you think?
100%. And I was sort of infuriated. We're going to touch on one thing about the race, not the PTO, in a hot take. But why wouldn't they be? Because if he's just sat in and you're in a group with him, he's beating you, is the assumption you have to make up until this result where you think, actually, he didn't run very well at all. If you take Jason West to the line, anyone in the sport, I believe, and he's fresh, he outruns you.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody wants to run against him. That's, I mean,
Christian Blumenfeld wouldn't want to run against him. No yep. way. You know, a good on-form Gustav Iden wouldn't want to run against him. So, yeah, I think they have to try and get rid of him. The problem is with a big group is how do you? Because you have to attack. But then you're giving five other people a wheel to sit in before it gets to Jason.
Yep. This just goes back to what I said earlier in the show, is now you've got these athletes that some of them will have had two scores or two non-scores they didn't think they were going to have. And now they're looking at the remainder of the calendar and sitting there going, huh, I got to try and make up for this now. Where am I going to find it? So I left Singapore just thinking, okay, we're going to have a really great race in San Francisco for a number of different reasons.
Yeah.
And the interesting piece will be, maybe you have somebody like a Sam Long who's got two second places. Does he decide to sit out San Francisco? Does he decide, or does he just go? Does he just go what we think Sam Long is going to do? He's going to put all his chips in and go, I'm on form. I'm doing St. George. I'm doing San Francisco. They're all close. I'm just going for it. Yo, yo, yo.
If I'm Sam Long, and Sam Long, I hope you're listening to this, which I know you're not, dude. For the love of God, just skip St. George. Put all your eggs, go get a freaking W in San Francisco, detrain, have a little season break, then start building back up for Lake Las Vegas, as you are going to be racing head-to-head against a majority of the Olympic guys, as we know that a majority of the Ironman guys will not be at this event, as Kona is the next week, and then go back some incredible results in the Middle East for the back half of the season.
I mean, before Martin Van Riel comes to join this party, because Martin Van Riel does not let Yuri Cullen ride off the front. Like, in no world whatsoever. That bike just gets harder with him there, and he runs well.
Yeah. But if you're Sam, and you 100%. Bag these points early, then someone like Yuri or Magnus in the back half of the season is not going to get those championship bonus double points, and he could steal the series right now.
I think in the course that San Francisco is a hilly course, I'm with you, Talbot. I think he wins that, Sam Long. Early prediction. He's just running so well. He's riding so well. Mm-hmm. He really needs to learn how to swim, but he rides so well, it almost doesn't matter. He was good in transitions, ice everywhere. It was a calculated race. Again, he seemed to enjoy it. And I know that was a quote from Jan Frodeno. When you're happy and having fun, the results will come. It was along those lines. I've butchered it. He speaks better English than I do. But he looks like he's having fun and enjoying it. So I'm with you, San Francisco.
And just one thing. We talked about the discipline that Sam had. He clearly made a decision to wear a non-sponsor correct helmet. in the race. He didn't wear an aero helmet. He wore somebody else's road helmet. And that clearly helped keep him cooler during the men's race. But that was a decision that he made as well, just to think about the overall cooling aspect that he was trying to achieve.
I think probably, I mean, depends on what you've tested, but some is a really small advantage, some it's a big advantage. And you kind of
he did not test that helmet. I mean, it was a sponsor incorrect helmet. So he probably bought it in Singapore or borrowed it.
And then he made it work. Fair. Decision personally. I think a really smart decision. Yeah. Anything else?
Let's run on. Yeah, let's run on to the DNFs. The hardest one for me to swallow was Alistair Brownlee because of those other DNFs, I don't want to say those athletes didn't want a DNF, but Alistair, God, comes off the bike, sees he's about to go over the mount line, exits early, tweaks his ankle. And
I don't know what happened, but I think he kicked the bike as it came over. He sort of paused with his foot coming through. I don't know what happened there. Yeah,
I want to knock him though, because he did the same thing at Edmonton. Alistair, go look at the freaking dismount line. Like, just go look at it and see where it's at. But race, I mean, no telling how his ankle felt. I believe he'll be back. It's funny, like, he would ever read my messages, but I sent him, I don't know if you guys ever saw the Kobe Bryant when he rolled his ankle or tore his MCL, ACL, whatever. His Achilles during a basketball game, and he wrote this long social media post. I was like, Alistair, this is you. You can be back. You're not at the end. And I think it just hurts the most because Alistair, I believe he could have possibly won the race.
So, he was running really well, like conservatively.
Mark.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. That was hard. It was hard. The other DNFs, Daniel Backergaard and Ben Canute. Ben Canute, doesn't he live in Arizona? That's hot, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Sam Laidlow.
Yeah, Laidlow. He DNF'd early. I've not heard from Laidlow what happened there.
He had GI issues. He's up. He's posted he's frustrated. He wants to be consistent. That's what his back half of the year is going to focus on. But
when you have three beverage partners, you're going to get some GI distress. So you got to keep them all happy. You're just sitting there chugging them all day. And actually, wait a minute. I got to count. He's got four beverage partners. I'm sorry.
Go on, who are they?
No, just I'm not saying them. But look, he's AG1, got some.
Red Bull, something else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he mixing them? Is he making cocktails ahead of the race?
Well, I'm saying that he's, you know, he's trying to keep them all happy. And if you do that, it's a big problem.
Do you know what it says to me after these first two races? Pretty poor results for Sam Laidlow. He's going to win Kona by miles. This is last year. Bang, average, bang, average, boom.
Yeah, here's the difference, though. I don't think that you're wrong. Here's the difference. He will have been, at the end of it, come Kona, he'll be the highest tier on whatever airline he's been flying. And so you all of a sudden just subtract those 25 days of not training because you've been traveling. Right. So you're 4 days in, you're 2 or 3 days on the exit, you do five of those trips. There's your 25 days that you haven't been training.
Yeah. That's the hard battle.
And that adds up. So I think that's the cost if you're trying to do both. Right.
Yep.
Agree. Leon Chevalier. Any thoughts? His swim was marginally better than Sam Long. He had the fifth fastest run with a 108.55. He biked terribly by Leon standards. He's one of these athletes that Ironman series, he wins that series. Yep. He wins the Ironman series. Yep. I don't know, unless you have Sam Long's horsepower on the bike, how you can cover that swim deficit in a 100K race. Yep. Whilst you are also so good at Ironman.
Yep. I think it was... to me, this is one of those. I'm not picking on Leon because I really like him.
Yeah, me too.
This is an athlete that's got to look and go, can I win the Ironman series? And I think the answer is yes. And so do you just go, okay, look, I'm gonna talk nicely to the PTO and I'm gonna think about exiting this series because I got to dip my toes in. I got to do a look, search, discover in the series. And I realized, like, I actually think I can win this Iron Man series. And I think if you have to probably...
with Texas, this bloody entry system, he can't race Texas. And then he needs to probably bank in, what is it, whatever the men's is. He could still do it. I don't think he will. I think he's committed, you know. And an athlete, when they commit, you've got to fight.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah.
But I agree with you fundamentally.
Last thing before we move on, Meekin Newt, I'm a little disappointed. I wish I could have seen him perform better. Hopefully he gets another invite back. Josh Amberger, 3-day notice, absolutely incredible. Almost the entire men's field, but 5 men got chicked. His wife did chick him on the run, but it was only by like nearly 20 seconds, and she outran pretty much all the other men. So I don't think any of us were expecting this from Josh. Josh is an Ironman athlete, shows up, incredible top 10 performance for him. He was stoked himself. So
I got to defend Meekin Newt. It was literally the last 8K, right? He was right there. I just think the heat got to him and he blew.
But didn't he do all his prep in Thailand?
Yeah, but you know, prep doesn't, it's not bulletproof. It just makes you more resilient. It doesn't make it, you know, it's not perfect, right?
Yeah. All right. That's the end of that. Pat, do we have another sponsor for the show this week? I mean, we're talking about drinks.
No, we're not. We didn't mention that at all, Tal, but let's move swiftly.
Oh, I thought we had another sponsor of the show.
Nope, not today.
All right.
If you want to sponsor the show, just please send us a DM on Pro Try News and Kyle will get to it and hopefully not mess up the sales pitch.
And if he does, give Pat a chance. That's his job. And you can have a second sales pitch off Pat.
Super so, yeah, we also, Try E-World Champs.
Oh, I can't tell you how bad that broadcast was. I tried to watch it. We didn't even get splits most of the time. Often you were just watching someone riding a turbo trainer.
I will say, though, I genuinely like the Will Tim Don combo.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Commentary. Yeah, fine.
Yeah, I feel visuals. Like they do a good job. I feel like the broadcast, what you said, though, they can only comment on what's on the screen in front of them, and they do a good job doing that.
Oh, a commentary. Yeah. I'll give you that. And they had a crowd, and it's in a stadium and everything. But with so much going on this year, T100, Olympics, Kona, Nice, all that stuff, I cannot care less about Super Tri. Sorry.
Here's what I'm noticing when I'm speaking to brands and they want to learn about triathlon and I have to explain all the different races that we have. They kind of just look at me like a deer in the headlights and they're like, man, triathlon's really confusing. And so there does need to be some sort of consolidation of probably the events and the formats. And I mean, we've said it before. It's just like there needs to be a winding down of some of these, I'm afraid. I think that there's potential. It's super cool. The indoor piece, there's a time and a place for it. And we've seen this, frankly, this isn't a triathlon problem. This is an esports problem. Esports completely, we thought were going to be the future during COVID. And now that regular events have come back, esports are in the endurance space completely dead.
Yeah, I agree. And so I was going to say that the time and the place is COVID.
So, could they have adjusted the broadcast to make it more digestible and easier to watch? Absolutely. But does that make it a super commercially viable product? I struggle to see that. And then we're going to talk about, you know, they had the biggest issue that hasn't been spoken about yet is they had a bad treadmill again. And so there was a male athlete.
I didn't watch enough to see this.
They wasn't on the, you didn't see it on the broadcast. So they had a treadmill that was way slow. And I talked about this in the pre-show. You need to ensure that every athlete is given a fair chance with proper equipment. And if that can't happen for the 10 athletes that are racing in the final, then the format shouldn't happen. And the reality is that the organization knows there was a bad treadmill and nothing was done about it. And I feel bad for the two athletes that were on it.
And did it take away from Chase's win?
Not this year.
He wouldn't have been beat though, would he?
No, he wouldn't have been beat. So. No. I don't. But I'm saying that you've got 10 athletes. They should all, if they're going to go do this event on an Olympic year, they should be guaranteed that they're going to be on equal equipment.
Yeah. I think that's totally fair.
I'm not asking for something that is inappropriate here. And so I think it's essential. So we can spend some time on the podium, but I think that there needs to be a reflection of this format and probably where it sits and stands in the hierarchy of triathlon.
Yeah. And if I am Super League, that last one we watched in France was extremely entertaining. Maybe try, which a lot of their races are more so that concept, pretty technical bikes. But I do believe there is a spot for that short distance racing, but where is it?
Yeah. And there's a note here. I presume it was Kyle. Is world champ used too much? Now, if you're Chase McQueen or Beth Potter, who won the women's race, are you going to get your turbo trainer bike sprayed up with your rainbow bands on it for winning the eSports World Triathlon Champs? I would suggest not. For me, there are three world championships in triathlon. And I don't think the PTO series is one. I think that's like ATP tennis series. That's golf series championships. For me, it's still World Series triathlon, almost at the pinnacle, Kona, or long, Ironman World Champs and 70.3 World Champs. They're the three world championships for me, and nothing yet. And I know that that's not me being, you can't be right or wrong on this. There are other things called World Champs. As a viewer and a fan, that's kind of what I recognize as the World Champs. What do you boys take?
This is a hot take. Too many world championships. Let me just read off to you the world championships. And I could be missing some. You can correct me. We got Duathlon World Championships. We got Aquathon World Championships. We got Esports World Championships. We got ITU Relay World Championships. We got Long Course World Championships. We have the Olympic Distance World Championships. We got the T100 World Championships. We have 70.3 World Championships. We have Ironman World Championships. Super League World Championships. Is there a Super Sprint World Championships there? Is there in there as well?
Probably.
I've just realized 11 World Championships.
I was eating Pringles during this, and this is definitely going to be clipped. So enjoy that, watching me eating Pringles, because I know that will go out. That was an excellent.
How many? Like the T100 World Championships. Get rid of Long Course World Championships.
Long Course.
No one cares.
The Long Course one. I'm with you. There's the Ironman World Champs.
It should really be down to four. It should be Ironman World Championships, 70.3 World Championships. You've got World Triathlon Series World Championships, and then you've got the T100 World Championship. Those should be your four. That's it.
I don't think a World Championships T100 has it just yet. I don't think you're World Champion.
End of the year, though. End of the year, the better athlete. I'm not knocking an Ironman, but the end of the year, the better athlete is the champion of the T100, not 70.3 Worlds.
Would you say that, right? If Yuri Cullen wins the men's series versus Sam Laidlow winning Kona, or Magnus winning Kona, or Lionel winning Kona in a magnificent race?
No, I would say, let's say two big rivals here. Sam Long wins the T100 series and Lionel Sanders, to get last second points to attempt to win the Ironman series, goes to 70.3 World Championship and wins 70.3 Worlds. I would say Sam's winning is better than Lionel's 70.3 World Championship.
Probably. Yeah. All right. Probably. We'll see. When I say I don't see it as a world champs, I don't knock in the T100 series. I think it's very clear. I think it's doing amazing thing and it's changing the sport. And if you win that, it's incredible. I don't know if it matters if you call it a world championships or not. I don't. because it's mainly run by a business as well, but then so Iron Man, so I'm contradicting. Yeah, okay. I think it's just interesting. It's a very personal take, isn't it?
Certainly. So we had 10 or 11. We agree we could take it down to 3 or 4. Is that fair?
Yeah, we'll call it that. Yeah. All right. Speaking of the Esports World Championship, let's dive into the final men. You had Chase McQueen. I mean, it really just took it away. He finally got some media training because last year he did some butterfly and he got really in big trouble for that by our federation. So this year he decided not to do butterfly. Steals the race, wins the world championship esports, but really very good performance by himself. And then in the women's final, caused a bit more drama post race than it did during the race. You had Beth Potter with her first race back. Beth Potter, the former duathlete who would never be able to compete at the world stage. She's not only competing at the world stage and winning test events, she's also winning the esports events. So, Cassandra Bergeron looks like that she maybe have pulled her calf, Mark?
I think she's okay. By the sounds of it, she put a post out. She wasn't sure how bad it was, so she was hurt, which I think most of our listeners will have seen her reaction on the podium when she gets sprayed with champagne. And she copped a lot of flack for that. I think if you are Beth, you're French, it's the Olympic year, you think you've just really potentially quite hurt yourself at the bloody Esports World Championships, and a deep rival of yours, and I don't know how well they get on, is spraying champagne in your face whilst you're unsure how well you are. I think I'd react pretty badly as well. I'm not sure it was the time to gloat, and that's not what Beth was doing, but I'm sure that's maybe how it felt. So I'm giving Cassandra Bergeron a pass for her reaction there, just with a bit of context to it.
But Beth wasn't doing anything. She was just on the podium celebrating.
Oh, yeah, just spraying champagne like normal. Yeah, I'm not knocking Beth.
Yeah.
I'm saying if she does it again, well, then we can all lay into Cassandra. But I'm giving her a pass on that slight grumpy attitude about having champagne.
Slight grumpy attitude.
A funny one on that, if you didn't see it, Super League Try with Holy Crap clips the thing, zooms in on Cassandra, makes her look like a complete, will refrain from cussing. We've done a really good job this entire show. There you go, everyone. Yeah. I don't think we're going to get the E on this show, so that's awesome.
They've since deleted the post.
But a funny thing on there is someone got on there and defended Cassandra Bergeron and said, guys, you can tell she's clearly not happy. She pulled her calf and something, something, something. And the person that went and even defended her too, which I thought was, maybe I'm looking into this too much, Georgia Taylor Brown went in there and she's like, yeah, praise emojis. Thank you for saying this and defending Cassandra Bergeron, which I think we all know there's a very big rivalry between Beth Potter and Georgia Taylor Brown.
Oh, between Beth and Georgia. Yes.
Yeah. So and I thought she was basically saying, like, I would say kind of knocking at Beth, but.
Oh, it's great. Just the drama, the gossip. And it's completely, again, social media. It's just the perception, isn't it? It's like, how do you interpret this 4-second image? And everyone will read it differently. So
yeah,
that's bad. That's probably my highlight of the event. So that says a lot about the event.
Another fantastic result. Katie Zafiris looking for a comeback after Miami. She did go over to Japan, did good there too. Great for her. She scored enough points. I believe she would have got enough points to get into Cagliari, Pat.
I honestly have no idea.
Yeah. I believe that the reason to go here was to bag points for Cagliari. So I'll go back to it. I'm really bummed Katie's not on the we had the start list posted for Yokohama this last week. I am really, really bummed that Katie's not on the start list.
Yeah. I'm going to add a hot take here. The National Federation quota needs to be removed completely, in my opinion. I don't see any reason why it needs to stand. They can hold, World Triathlon can hold as many spots as they want to create. In this case, it's 5 for special invites, which they are actively using anyway. If a country like the US or Germany has 6, 7, 8 athletes in the top 50, it will not impact the race. Those athletes are not teammates. Most of the time, they're not friends. They act as individuals during the race. And so they're going to have this problem in the T100 series as well, where they're going to exceed the quota. I just think it's one of those rules that's in place. I don't understand the rationale for it. And it's like, if they just need to have a clear roll down, if the top 50 or 60 want to get into a World Series race, they've earned their way into that series. If they choose to opt out, the next person on the list will roll in. If you look at these wait lists and you see the countries, both on the men and women's side, where it says exceed the national federation, now you're at the back of the list. It just, there's no one that can give me a rationale that's clear and concise why we have a max of 5 people per country in these races. It doesn't make sense.
It kind of harps back to the Olympic thing, doesn't it, of inclusivity and championing a small sport in smaller nations. But it's got to the point where it massive. I mean, German women is the example you use there. It's horrendous for them at the moment. They've got so much strength and depth, and it's just stopping young, talented athletes having a chance to shine. And we know athletes develop at different rates, and some of these girls might not get a start there.
And here's the reality.
German woman, you could say U.S. woman, German woman, and Great Britain woman. They all are the depth of field. And I believe Katie Zafiris should be racing in Yokohama. I think
of course she should be.
She's absolutely ranked ridiculous.
Like,
she's not.
Yeah, she's ranked like 26th, and there's two other U.S. women behind her that are also in the top 50. What we've understood and demonstrated with the points is that you can go to the tier two races, like World Cups, score at those, and become ranked in the top 30. That's your way to punch into the series. So they already have a pathway where you can earn your right into that. And it's like, I just think if you've punched your way into the top 50 in the world rankings, you should just be able to put your hand up and go to a World Series race. That's the point of the series. It shouldn't also be capped by a national federation quota. It doesn't make any sense.
Here's a question for you. If you are, what if you're ranked way out of the top? Can you just go show up at a World Series event? Because
they have up to 5 special invites per World Series in this event. So in the past, somebody like Elisa Norden, who got a silver medal at the Olympic Games and then stepped away and then tried to come back for Rio, they gave her a special invite. So typically they'll do 1 to 2 special invites as a chance for you to punch in. So in the case of Yokohama,
did Gwen take one of those last year?
No, they could not give Gwen one because they had filled every race on the National Federation quota.
Okay.
So they're reserved.
Flora Duffy got into Yokohama, I would guess.
Correct. Yep. So
because Flora Duffy, if you don't know, Flora Duffy has rolled onto the start list, which she should
totally be able to. That's why I'm saying there's 2 things going on here. They keep 5 slots for special invites, and then when they have a race, whether it's a start list of 55 or in the case of Yokohama, they've bumped it up to 60, they just do 5 subtracted by that total. And it's like you've got the total subtracted by 5, and then they're going to go down the list and they're going to say, okay, would the top 55 like to start? And then people put their hand up and then they just roll down the list. It's super simple.
Yeah.
But now if I have to explain to somebody right now that Katie Zafiris is ranked whatever 25th and she's technically last on the wait list, that makes sense to nobody.
Yeah. Yeah, great. And it's nice to see you defending Katie Zafiris, who's fighting for a slot with your wife for the Olympics.
Yeah, we want to see that race. That's not a question. And everybody wanted to see when Gwen was at the back of the points last year, but she had all of a sudden fought her way into 50th, but she was, you know, not, she was the 6th, 7th, 8th ranked American.
She flew to Yokohama.
Everybody said the same thing. They go, we should be able to see Gwen in the race. I agree. These are not complicated things, in my opinion.
Right, we all agree. We've still got a bit to cover, and we've hit an hour and 3 minutes already. There was a Conti Cup in Spain. The big interesting points of that sort of fell on the women's side of the race. Emma Lombardi was just bloody excellent. There was a small group that got away, about 5 of them on the bike. Emma Lombardi in there, and she ran to the win, beating Kate Woff. The interesting thing for Kate is that she was racing Sophie Caldwell, and they are 2 of the 3 athletes fighting for 2 slots on the GB team. Kate ran about 25 seconds into her over 5K to take 2nd place, with Sophie Caldwell 3rd. That was probably like the main point of interest in that race. It says a lot for the British team coming up. Also, just how good Elena Lombardi is getting at the moment. Kate is not a slouch on the run, and Emma, you know, she won by almost 30 seconds in the end. The men's side of the race, there was Cameron Main, another GB athlete, won. It's nice to see some GB men coming through that aren't the Brownleys or Alex Yee. We need that second and third athlete for the relay. So good to see a young lad coming through there. Antoine Duval from France came second, and Vincent Hernandez from España in a home race. It came down to a bit of a running race, basically, off of a fairly large bike pack. Nothing really else to add on that race, I don't think. Yeah, there was also... Go on, Talbot, please.
Just going to say, there was another Conti Cup in Taupo this past week. Matt Hauser takes the win. Taylor Reed, kind of a home race for him, gets second. Brandon Copeland gets third. And on the female side, we have Ellie Hottink? Australia.
Hoytlink. Yes, she's one of... Yeah, she stayed at our house. She's done a ton of training with Gwen. Super pumped for Ellie.
Yeah. Rachel Hill, and then Thorpe for third. Interesting, in the female race, there was not another nationality represented outside of Australia and New Zealand. Going to get races this weekend. There's Challenge Gran Canary. They have a start list on the PTO website. If you want to see it, you can go look at it. There's a lot of other 70.3s.
I want to hit one on Challenge Gran Canaria. Rosie Wild is racing. You never heard of Rosie Wild. She's a friend of ours from the army. It's her first pro race. She is the first woman in history to pass P Company, which is the British Airborne selection. Still one of only two, I think. Absolute weapon. She's not really a pro. She kind of just bumbles through life, but she's got Sam Proctor coaching her, coaches Indy Lee. So big up Rosie Wild if you're listening. Good luck, mate.
Awesome. Lots of 70.3s going on this weekend. Ironman South Africa is that next weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is quite funny. If you look at Flora Duffy's Instagram, Flora Duffy's out on a ride and you got Daniela Reef on her wheels. So we must have been talking shop a little bit about the T100 series. Pretty exciting. I would say Danielle is showing up here to punch a ticket.
Yeah, 100%. And it's huge prize money because it's one of the big regional champs. The other one on that start list is Alistair Brownlee. So we'll see if that happens. Arthur Horseshoe's on there as well. There's a few of the men. It's quite a big race. The other one that's massive is 70.3 Valencia. It has 91 men on the start list. Spanish race, Spanish referees, 91 men. With Leo Bajer on there, I guess, to punch his ticket for 70.3 Worlds later in the year would be my guess. But yeah, that's going to be chaos. And then Conti Cup in Japan, World Cup, Wollongong's on. All the start lists will be on there. Should we do hot takes?
One day and 5 hours of travel. Just looked it up from Singapore to South Africa. So, Alistair, if you do that...
He tried to get on Texas, didn't he? So I think maybe he booked on this just in case. Let's see if he actually has a stab at it or not. I'll be surprised if we see him on the start line.
Yeah, makes sense. That's pretty much it.
We still have hot takes after the ones that we've just embedded in the show.
We can run through these. There's a big one on here though.
Yeah, the huge one, and I wanted to keep this separate from the PTO because I don't think it's a PTO problem. Drafting in Singapore was ridiculous. Now, the PTO, they're not the refs. It's a World Triathlon ref. The PTO commentators were pointing it out, which shows they were willing to be critical of their own race, which I love, like point out problems. Jan even pointed out a motorbike that was involved a little bit, but that was really minor. They have never, ever had a drafting penalty at PTO races, but they're giving out penalties for Sam Long goggles not being in the box. The drafting in that front group for a while, for maybe the first hour, was horrendous. And we know it's horrendous because the race ranger lights were on.
And so why were the athletes breaking the rules if they have the race ranger lights flashing? What's the rationale there?
Because the PTO have never given a drafting penalty, even with race ranger previously. If you've never given one penalty, and also there was a motorbike with a ref on there, no penalties were being given when some people were drafting. So the rest are like... sod it, I'm in. And that happened for about an hour until Yuri popped off the front. Yuri was like, I've had enough of this. But they all should have been done for drafting at one point. I'm not even picking on athletes here. The compression into the corners was ridiculous, up the hills was ridiculous. Jiří was in the draft zone at some point. Alistair was, Carl Smith was, the whole thing. And then,
so I guess if you're an official and you're gonna lead the briefing in San Francisco, it would be time to say, hey, there's going to be a new era on drafting here. And if you're
drafting, want that, I believe.
And if you're drafting, we're gonna, well, it makes for better. 100%. In the case of if it's a true drafting penalty, we want the drafting to be enforced, right? And then they want to talk about it. I mean, if you look at the PTO social, if anybody does anything that could be construed as clickbait, they're gonna post it on Instagram immediately. So I think we want a fair race to be called. We want drafting to be enforced. So I think it would be time for that to step up and say, hey, we're gonna do this.
Yeah, and what I desperately hope doesn't happen is like a 2022 Laura Phillip drafted penalty. Now they sort of say, right, we need to bang out some penalties.
Yeah,
and they go looking for one, and Laura didn't deserve one then. Yeah. I hope now, you know, it doesn't. What you don't want to do is egg them on so much. There's a knee-jerk reaction, and they spike out a penalty to Magnus Ditlev as he comes through.
Yeah, no, what we need to, I mean, what they need is, when you need to have a competent person that understands and done the racing and say like, look, guys, like, we're going to call it if it's bad, you know, and you need to understand those situations. And I go back to the penalty that Kat got in Tulsa.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, no, like when you're going through a feed zone, like those are like there's a neutral blanket over those. Yeah, right. Like, and so if you're going through a 180 turn, we're going to just like shut a few of those off. Right.
Yeah, and so someone said to me, I said, so why wouldn't they draft on some comment and on an Instagram story? And someone said, integrity, ? And I'm like, yeah, except sport in all its forms exists for people to play within the rules as much as they possibly can. And when that rule is no longer enforced, everybody breaks it. It's like if you didn't have a false start law in American football, everyone would false start. Does that make them gross cheaters? No, it just becomes the accepted norm within the sport. And my worry is that the PTO racing will edge towards that if world triathlon referees don't sort it out.
We just saw a blip of Kyle on our screen here. Then he had to go back.
I think he's listening along. Another one I had was Javier Gomez pulling out of the race. The reason why I wanted to put this in here is for all the armchair quarterbacks out there. They announced Javier's pulling out, and guy got roasted online. Roasted. And he had said it was for personal issues, which I think a lot of us knew it was his. And we want to send our condolences to Javier Gomez and his wife. And I mean, it's like, I could only imagine his mother had passed away on Sunday morning, and something. So I went on the Instagram and I said, hey guys, this is for personal reasons. Javier's choosing to go home and spend time with his mother. And some guy wrote back and he was like, all right, well then here's a hot take for your show. Should athletes share what their personal info is for their reasoning to drop out of the race?
I'm trying not to swear. But that guy needs to off with the word for it. Oh, honestly. And I really hope some people that commented stuff like that about before he'd even said the personal issues, people like Gomez has been washed up. Like, yo, what a surprise he hasn't raced again. When they saw his post, tragic post announcing that his mother sadly passed away, I hope they felt awful. awful. Athletes shouldn't have to deeply explain. If you miss 9 races in a row for personal issues, well, your sponsors will be the one asking questions. Your contractors that are paying you to race, they'll ask the questions. But if you're missing one race because you've got personal issues and you have a career like Javier Gomez, he's earned a bit of faith, I think, from us as fans.
And I think to defend that guy in any way, shape, or form, I think last year we saw an athlete.
No, don't bother. Don't bother.
All right. last hot take. Remaining T100 races will be more competitive with full fields.
Correct.
100%.
Unless injuries hit a few bit. Pat, you do it.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, what you've had is you've had the ability to sit a few races out, right? And so we have four athletes in this case that for whatever reason, off the top of my head, it's Ann Haug, Laura Philipp, Max Newman, and Javier Gomez, who have missed their ability to miss the first two. They have to go to the next six. Where you'll start to run into that now is there's a handful of contracted athletes that are also in the Olympic pipeline, so they've been given the ability to miss two more. They're going to have to go to these races. And so you're going to have that cascading effect down where they have to go. And then I think coming from the pressure coming from the other side is you're going to have eager athletes that come, we'll call it June 1st for most countries, will understand their Olympic fate. So either they're going to the Olympics or they're not going to the Olympics. The ones that don't go to the Olympics all of a sudden on June 1st are going to be sending frantic emails to Dylan McNeese saying, if there's a wild card, I want to get in. I want to go. And that will make the races more competitive. I want to touch on one other thing. What we still don't have clarity on are
how you get on the wait
list. Well, not necessarily the wait list, but even how the T100 is going to choose those athletes. And where I do expect some behind the scenes tension is the T100 is going to say to certain people, you get to leapfrog the list because you performed here. And World Triathlon is going to say, nope, you've got to follow our protocol. And T100 is going to say, from my cold, dead hands, will you be keeping me to your protocol? We're going to leapfrog whoever the hell we want. It's our series. You govern it. If you don't like us, if you don't like it, take us to court. So I think this is a little bit of a popcorn situation for us true insiders of the sport. My understanding from Singapore is that we had a lot of tension around the upper limits of the water. And there was probably World Triathlon was probably trying to, they certainly don't want to cancel the race, but they want to follow some sort of rules. And that you've got the T100 side, which is the business that where the show must go on. And what we saw in Singapore was the best show possible. And that will lean leverage back to the T100 that says, we are the show. We're going to do it our way. We're going to let you, we're going to play by your rules on the field to play. But that's where we're going to draw the line.
Yeah, there was some miracle temperature readings there, weren't there?
There was like a box of ice went in, stick went down. Yeah.
And having slated them for it, they did some great stuff to combat it, like fresh ice in T1 and T2 by every bike station. They did everything they could, as well as find a slightly dodgy thermometer. And we got a brilliant race for it, and no one's been seriously hurt. So I'm not going to comment much more on it. The one that I find fascinating is there is wait lists. So there's rules on how you get selected off the wait list. Priority is your PTO ranking. And then there's some other priorities. But how you get on the wait list is interesting. And the T100 Singapore wait list on the World Triathlon website, I've never heard of most of those athletes. And it looks like they're submitted by national governing bodies. Yep. But they were 100% ignored because number one male on... I mean, Josh Amberger was on there, but he was the sixth person on that wait list. So But then he's probably ranked highest off the waitlist, actually.
Yeah, so true. It does. But to understand, so it does. So here's the reality: in a ITU, in a World Triathlon traditional short course race, if you and I are and Talbot are trying to get on the waitlist, and Talbot's ranked first, you're ranked second, I'm ranked third. If I go to the race and it's 1 hour before, Talbot's not there, you're not there. They look at who's next on the list, and I'm racing. So
I've also just realized as well, the rules favor the ITU. The PTO have made the rule on how they select off the wait list. All you have to do is get your national governing body to put you on the wait list. And then it defaults to the PTO's rules, which are our ranking. However, if you're ranked by our standards better than whoever else is on this wait list, we have the choice to put you on. So national governing bodies can put someone like Max Stapley on, say, if he doesn't go to the Olympics. But if he's ranked zero, well, 4,000th or whatever he is at that distance, so he's done one or two good races, Josh Amberg will still get picked because he's much higher on the PTO ranking, for instance. Yep.
But what's going to happen is if for some reason, if let's use Max Stapley as an example, let's just say he wins the Olympics. His ranking is still 4,000th.
Yeah.
After the Olympics, does the T100 have the ability to leapfrog him into the next race?
And I think absolutely.
I know that they should and they can, but I'm not sure that they've got the ability in World Triathlon's eyes to do that.
I think the way they'd get around that is just outright ignore World Triathlon.
That's what I said.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You know, an interesting one. We'll hit on it when we get a little bit closer. And let's say use Jackson Laundry, Mark Dubrick for examples. Do you show up in San Francisco? You know, Josh is going to be there as well, who's a higher ranked athlete than both of them. Will probably go up from this past weekend. But do you show up and just say, "I'm here, I'm ready"?
Have kit, will play.
Or
absolutely.
But there is the Ironman series race the same day in Boulder, Colorado. So it will be interesting. But with that being said, we will give you all the latest and greatest information here on the show. We like to pride ourselves in we are the best triathlon show. I know it for a fact because I went and listened to the others. So with that being said, share the show with other people. We really love all you guys. We love coming on the show every week. In fact, we're going to have to postpone this week's show because Kyle had some work meetings and stuff. And we, Pat, me and Mark talked about it. We're like, we got to roll on. I mean, this is one of the greatest things we do every week. We get to get on here, talk shop, and we really appreciate you guys listening week in and week out. If you can, hit that subscribe button, then turn on the notification button so every time we post a show, it'll pop up or leave a review for us, only if it's a good review. We don't like bad reviews. If you have bad reviews, just send it in the DMs to us. We'll see you next week. Anything else you guys want to add?
Did anyone press record?
Oh, shit.